future is now. And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I will be your host for the next 15 minutes. We're coming live from the city of London, Shoreditch. So let's get down to a business. London is absolutely kicking at the minute. There's so many events going down. Tomorrow, there is going to be an event in the city of London focused on STOs. The event is titled Security Tokens Realized, the inaugural summit of security tokenization. And that's going to be held at the Grand Connaught Room tomorrow, which is Thursday the 23rd. So if you're in London town, definitely check it out. It's going to be held at the De Vere Grand Connaught Rooms, which is a beautiful location in Holborn. So with that in mind, today's episode, we're going to be talking about why Ethereum 1.0 failed and Bitcoin succeeded. This is a really great piece of information. It's really great content that we put a lot of thought into, along with a gentleman by the name of Noah. Noah has a lot of writing on this subject as well, and we've used some of his points to incorporate them to make sure this content is the most impactful and insightful. So with that in mind, here's what's been going down the last 24 hours. So one of the top stories is that Huobi shed staff and plans stablecoin. There's been reports in the last week that over 100 staff members have been let go. I believe Huobi currently has around 1,200 employees working for them, which is a massive amount. New OTC desk launches in the US. Nucleus Capital, a boutique brokerage firm based in the US, is reportedly set to launch a new OTC crypto trading desk. Interesting to see what kind of clientele they're going to be attracting, if they're going to go for the average Joe, or if they're going to go for the more institutional type of clients, the family offices out there. So interesting to see what happens there. AAX is to use London Stock Exchange technology. So Hong Kong-based Atom Group has announced that its upcoming AAX digital asset exchange will use international grade tech from London Stock Exchange Group technology. This is really interesting because AAX will enable users to trade spot and futures markets for cryptocurrencies, and it plans to eventually add a range of tokenized assets, including security tokens, asset-backed tokens, and stable coins to that as well. So that'd be really interesting to see if, you know, working with the London Stock Exchange not only brings credibility to what they're looking to do, but also encourages and incentivizes others to start using their platform and help with adoption for more institutional clients. Coinbase expands services for high volume customers. So Coinbase has announced that it will now support inbound and outbound SWIFT transfers from non-US bank accounts, meaning that its Pro and Prime customers in Asia and Europe can now wire transfer to their accounts. So they're no longer put under the banner of you can only deposit an X amount to your account unless you've got XYZ trading history of us. I mean, it was an absolute joke. So that's really interesting, and we should see volume from them spike up dramatically. So that's good to see. For us here at SVK Crypto, it's Wednesday. We've had a phenomenal week thus far. Super, super busy with so much stuff going on. We've got our event on the 29th. Really pumped to be delivering that to you guys. That event is going to be titled Blockchain in 2019, What You Need to Know. It's going to be a really, really good event. I'm really excited to get kind of people's reactions from this. We're trying to kind of a different format for that event. We're also going to have a few special guest speakers we're going to be announcing closer to the event date as well. On the investment standpoint here at SVK Crypto, we've got so much good news to be coming out to you guys in the next month or so. The core team here has been working really hard night and day to be delivering that. So we're all really, really excited to be getting that news out. We've just been inundated. I mean, it's really tricky day to day because there's so much stuff going on. You always have to focus on the end goal. And our end goal, you know, is to deploy capital and find great projects with great teams to deploy that capital to. So, you know, we're super focused on that. We're meeting people from all around the world here in London town, back-to-back meetings. And more importantly, like, we want to deliver more value. So, you know, we are going to be recording those meetings as well, putting them up in audio format. Super excited to be doing that as well. So with that in mind, let's get down to business and get on to the next part of the show. All right, so let's get down to business. So let's kick things off. So Ethereum 1.0 wouldn't be undergoing a complete redesign unless it had major flaws. So how did we get here? And why was Bitcoin so much better? So the important factors are user experience and economics. At a minimum, for a product to succeed, it needs to be a compelling alternative to an existing problem. And the transaction fee must not exceed the economic value of the actual transactions. Together, these points point toward an upward trajectory for Bitcoin and a downward trajectory for Ethereum 1.0. So competing on user experience. There's a saying that one product to replace another with network effects, it needs to be 10 times better. Specifically, it must be good enough to justify the painful switching costs. Here we examine the first competitor and if those improvements could be arguably be called a 10x better experience. So Bitcoin was 10x better. Who was Bitcoin's first competitor? Gold comes to mind, but Bitcoin's inflation in the early days was very large, far exceeding that of physical gold mining. So there was little Bitcoin had to offer gold bugs in terms of longevity, inflation, decentralization, at least for now. It was not yet a competitive product. Rather, Bitcoin's first competitor was the wire, the ACH transfer. In the developed world, it's hard to think of someone without a bank account. And the base of people with experience using these workflows is about as high as the number of people who have ever filed taxes. Moving money could cost up to £30 for a wire and take one business day, which means it could take a total of 3 days given that banks often don't operate on the weekend. ACH transfers are cheaper but much slower, taking 3 to 5 business days to process. So a wire transfer cost up to £30, one business day latency, uptime, business hours. ACH was around £2.50, £3, something like that. And latency, 3 to 5 days, uptime, business hours. Bitcoin cost pennies, latency, 1 hour, uptime, 24/7. So Bitcoin was an obvious improvement with 10-minute block times and fees that were, for a very long time, under a penny. Unlike banks, Bitcoin didn't shut down after 5 p.m. or on a weekend. It was an obvious 10x improvement, so much so that years later, many continue to think that Bitcoin is a consumer payment network rather than just a settlement layer or a store of value. So with that in mind, today, Bitcoin is thought of an alternative to gold rather than the wire transfer is irrelevant. During its most formative years, it would was able to basically onboard users by providing a clear alternative to bank transfers. Ethereum was originally branded a world computer with frequent references to Web 3.0, where Ethereum could be the backbone of a secure and decentralized internet. Since the contemporary web is referred to as a Web 2.0, I think it's a fair thing to say basically Ethereum's a first competitor. So Web 2.0, bandwidth for megabytes, latency, hundreds of milliseconds, scalability, billions of DAO, cost, free, subsidized by advertising, Ethereum in kilobytes per second, latency, 15 seconds to minutes, scalability, 1 million DAO, and cost around 6 cents per transaction. So the contemporary web is built out using the client-server model and is extremely scalable thanks to horizontal scaling, i.e. sharding. There are billions of internet-connected users and tens of billions of internet-connected devices. Latency is often so small, it's not neurologically perceivable to actually see. So, bandwidth is good enough to stream video and costs are largely free, subsidized by advertising. So Ethereum is not exactly a platform ready for any sense to offer improvements on the contemporary web. Its bandwidth isn't enough to upload small images. The most data that can be uploaded per block is around 13 kilobytes. At 15 transactions per second, only about 1 million active daily users can be supported. Latency is far longer than 2 second limit. That will frustrate users on the web. Every state change is approximately 6 cents, which bodes poorly given how much interactivity is part of a normal web browsing experience. So every time you go to a new website, you'd have to pay to interact with that website, you'd have to pay. I mean, it would be a complete joke. So Ethereum is unfortunately not the 10x improvement everyone is looking for. If we're polite, it's a 10x worse improvement. And if we're honest, it's several orders of magnitude worse still. Ethereum was picking a battle that couldn't be won here. Web 2.0's superpower was scalability, and that was Ethereum's weakness. But then again, you could always make the argument that even though Ethereum set out to be Web 3.0, like it has many other use cases. It was great for raising capital, the implementation of a smart contract, the ability for security. Like Ethereum has many other breakthroughs, but for this, we're just kind of talking about what they originally set out to achieve, and we're kind of taking them at face value for that. So economics of transactions, it's an unspoken reality that for a platform like a blockchain to be viable, the economic value of the transactions must at a minimum exceed the transactions fees paid. Without this, we're just burning money and using the platform as a toy. Single fee markets will fall to an equilibrium, but multiple competing fee markets can crowd out applications with a low economic value. So Bitcoin's single application platform was smooth sailing. As a single application platform, the transaction fee will always be what users are willing to pay because it's an equilibrium. There are no other applications to compete with, although there were secondary uses for Bitcoin, such as gambling and storing data. The primary function was not just the most popular one, but also the one with the highest economic value. I mean, Bitcoin is a database. It's a terrible use, but it's definitely a use you could potentially do. So Ethereum's multi-application platform had unexpected interactions. As a multi-application platform, the application can interact with each other in unintended ways. Among the applications used, they'd presumably do not each provide the exact same amount of economic value, since users will pay transaction fees in proportion to the economic value of a transaction. Applications with high economic value can crowd out applications with low economic value. So wealth transfer outpriced apps on Ethereum. In Ethereum's case, despite its intended use case for being a decentralized application, the most popular use of Ethereum is still transferring wealth without the assistance of dApps. This is augmented by the faster block times that makes Ethereum a short-term alternative for Bitcoin for consumer payments. Ironically, what was surely considered to be a secondary use of Ethereum is now setting a transaction fee baseline that's putting dApps out of business. Interacting with the web. So unlike transferring wealth, it's not high-risk workflow. If you try to authenticate to a website or update your Facebook status and there is some interruption or error, you can try again. There is no real risk of a catastrophic mess up in any way, shape, or form. And coincidentally, little need for security. So legal systems and or insurance, like with wealth transfer, this is largely the reason that software engineering doesn't require licenses to work in. In contrast with other fields like medicine or other engineering fields. So Web 3.0 applications have been crowded out by wealth transfer. This has been the fate of most apps, failing to deliver economic value on a per transaction basis, greater than the current median fee of 6 cents. Apart from EOS. So the Ethereum 1.0 dApps that survived lacked traction. So with that said, there have been a few categories of dApps which have provided enough economic value to strive. So most notably, there are gambling, decentralized exchanges for on-chain tokens, prediction markets, ICOs, well, used to be ICOs, and collateral-backed loans. So what they share is that people are willing to pay on par with baseline transactions fee for these workflows. The problem, however, is that these are niche applications that are collectively do not nearly support the current market cap of Ethereum. So for Ethereum, to compensate for being supported by applications with low economic value, it would need to have more activity, which is not the case. So why did Bitcoin do so well and Ethereum always seemed to struggle? Bitcoin was a 10x improvement over the wire, ACH transfer. Bitcoin only had one use case, which was also had high economic value. So the fee market adjusted to what users were willing to pay. Ethereum was 10x worse in that instance compared to Web 3.0 and the structure of that. So, I mean, in conclusion, I think it's really interesting to kind of see where they both started, the reasons for them being there. But, you know, then again, I also want to mention, as we have done, that Ethereum was revolutionary of its own right with the generation of a smart contract, which has really been a revolution within the whole blockchain ecosystem. So listen, with that in mind, that's a wrap. I got to bounce. Thank you for your time and attention as always. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. We have been blown away with the amount of emails we're receiving. We've been blown away with the subscriber growth since the new year. We've been blown away. So thank you all so much for subscribing as well. It means so much to us here at SVK Crypto. Remember, if you have any questions or queries, feel free to email myself, cstory, C-S-T-O-R-R-Y, at svkcrypto.com. Hit us up on Telegram, SVK Crowd. Hit us up on YouTube. We've got so much great content. We did 1 year in crypto in 100 seconds yesterday. Just drop. Check that out. www.youtube.com/SVK Crypto. You cannot miss it. And join our Telegram, SVK Crowd. So with that in mind, that's a wrap, and I've got to bounce.